Hello, my name's Scott, and you're listening to The Joys of Teaching Literature. We're here talking about all things education, thesis statements, omniscient narration. What other academic jargon can I throw at you? The dorky world of teaching. If you want to know more about me, my website's www.theteachersworkshop.com. I offer online professional development for high school English teachers and general education teachers, too. And so this should be a quick podcast, but hopefully valuable. You're maybe thinking, it's August 24th today, so you might be thinking, I've actually seen online that a lot of teachers have started school already, even like a couple of weeks ago, actually. So they're already, they've already been doing this, thinking about how to start the year. And actually this, I guess maybe because we've had so much professional development before school starts, I feel like every year we're thinking about and brainstorming on like how do we start the year in a way that is going to give us a really strong start. You know, there's that book 180 days. But if you've been teaching a while, you know that the first week is super important. It's where at the same time, now that I've been teaching a while, I know that it's really just about being yourself. They just want to know who you are. And so if you start off with all these rules and don't do this and we're going to, run class this way, and a supervisor wants to just say, this is throwing a bunch of rules at them in the beginning of the year and even telling them, you want this binder, we're going to collect things this way, and doing all that kind of stuff is just, they're excited to come back to school, right? They're thinking about what outfit they're wearing, thinking about what friends they want to see that they haven't seen over the summer. They've traveled different places, perhaps, or they've worked different jobs, or they've done nothing. It's a good reason to want to start school. So they're excited. They're excited to just meet their teacher, and they want to know if that you're passionate about your subject area. So I mostly just jump right into a discussion about literature and life and philosophy. And over the years I've gotten away from those kinds of, of course I like to know their names right away. I think that's really important to say hello to them. That's a part of establishing relationships in our classroom, learning their names right away, being able to greet them and talk to them. I have like a weird method that I write their names down. They tell me their name, I write it down, I write down how they pronounce it, and then I ask them to keep in the same seats for a while, and then I basically just look at their face and their name as many times as I can, and eventually as they usually do it when they're writing, so I can sit there and kind of just look at who they are. And for the first writing assignment, that's when I learn their names. But so there's of course some routine stuff that we do. But I start off, I had a podcast about this. If you want to go back and listen to it, it's called Symbolism Icebreaker. And I usually just bring in an object or some kind of, I usually bring a rock in. I was thinking about bringing like a plant or something random, putting it in the middle of the class and having a conversation. I have them write about it. And then they share their responses and say what they wrote about. And say, all right, well, why did everybody write something different about this single object? There's one thing that's sitting in front of us. What's the story behind this thing? Where did it come from? It's usually something I can tell a couple stories about that, it's funny. They can kind of get to know me that way. But we can talk about symbolic thought, where it's like everything around us an object is something that just has meaning. A symbol is just something that is an object that has meaning. It's something that's real. Like not, a symbol is not a metaphor. It's an actual reality, whereas a metaphor is something that's transformative. We make something into something else, and that's what makes it sort of have its power. But the power of a symbol is just that it's got some meaning that we endow it with, some story or some association, perhaps, that has come to us over the years of, living our lives and having experiences. And so we have that conversation about time and space and point of view, right? There's all these different kids in the classroom just looking at this one thing. We all have our own kind of way of looking at it. So we talk about perspective. So that's a good way of just jumping into those philosophical conversations about what it is we're doing here in an English class you know, it's made up. It's a fictional world, right? We're mostly doing fiction. I could argue that everything's kind of an element of fiction to it, right? Like, if we say, oh, here are the reasons why we should go to this war, even though they might be fictional, or maybe they are real reasons or good reasons. That's our sort of job, is to figure out what's real and what's not. When somebody says something, is it a lie or is it a truth? You know, and so the world of nonfiction is not really nonfiction. We can sort of have this. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing as language arts teachers too, is like figuring out what is a fact, where did that fact come from, what makes it real, and so fiction works that way too, where we're looking at an object and we're thinking about what makes it real, what makes it have, what words can we use to label this single thing. It's almost impossible. It's an impossible task, right? And so that's, you know, again, I went over this in another podcast. I don't get too extensive about it, but that's called, it's what I call the symbolism icebreaker. Kind of had people over the years maybe bring in something themselves so they can talk about this object themselves, just to continue that kind of conversation. I think I did that on a volunteer basis last year. It's like sort of had volunteers bring in different things, or just even from their memory, just like, hey, what's like a random object in your room or your house that's symbolic? Like, what's a symbol? How do we think symbolically? This is not just a literary thing, right? And so from that conversation, I jump right into poetry. And poetry is so perfect to start off the year with, because number one, I think a lot of students see it as a challenge. And so I can just say, hey, by the way, it's not, right? Poetry is just our thoughts on paper. It's a stream of consciousness, if you want to call it that. It's the opposite of the stream of consciousness, is incredibly structured thing where we notice sound patterns and grammatical patterns that emerge, that repeat themselves over the course of the poem. You can think about things like enjambment, and why the line goes off into the next line without any punctuation mark or free verse, and the sonnet, the villanelle, sestina. So we can, all these different beautiful structural things that make the language sound nice, look nice, make us think, you know, very, very deeply about what it is we're listening to, or reading with our eyes, or listening to with our ears. It is, of course, it is a challenging thing, but I like to listen to poetry first. Poems that are pretty easily, we'll call it digestible, or accessible, where it's something that's, you understand it. It's straightforward. Not the message, but just what it's talking about is there. You know, a lot of poems digress. They go off on a tangent. They have multiple images, so many images, you can't keep track of it all. So I like to start off with just listening to poems, and actually looking at videos where poets are reading their own poems. So that's another podcast that I did, 6 poems to read out loud, I think it's called. And then I think I did another one on the videos that I show, but maybe I'll do another one on that. But there's different videos that I show, where again, it's about the emotional impact of, like, you just listen to this poem and it really pulled at your heartstrings. It's not always something that happens when you read it on a page, because when somebody's reading something out loud with the emotion of the words, and they have the experience in their tone, when they speak those words out loud, it just becomes more human. It makes us feel sort of attached to the experience and the story of the person, rather than just trying to figure out the meaning of the words on this page. And so I sort of shift from the conversation about symbolism into this thing where it's like, okay, now every word that we read is symbolic, but it also has a place in reality, just like the rock or the plant or whatever symbol that you have that you put in front of everybody, something that's a symbol that you're saying is symbolic. Now you're saying, okay, all words are symbolic. So you can take every single word and every single line very, very seriously, just like we did with this plant. Now every word has this object or this image or this emotion, right? Not even something that you can always see, right? Because words are they're ideas. They're not always nouns, right? They're all these different things, like action and movement. And And so, you know, when we shift it to that conversation, then all words become magical. They become not this single word, but they have connotations, they have other meanings. There's all this different wonderful stuff going on in a single word. And of course, then there's phrases and there's sentences, and then there's stanzas, right? And so this whole thing is moving and unfolding, and it's this sort of machine that's got different parts that we have to figure out how they all work together or don't work together, right? And so that's why I basically shift the conversation from, yeah, and it's poetry. It's you're not saying go read this five page, right? This is kind of sometimes, this is how I used to start class. I would say, okay, we're going to talk about chapter 1 and 2 tomorrow, read it for homework tonight. And you're like giving them a book right away. And it's like, oh, we have homework right away. And you want to get them excited about school. And so I do give them a book right away, not on the first day of school, maybe not even the second or third, just whenever I get the book, you know, you got to go in the book room and get the book, but I'll do a whole poetry unit while they read the first novel entirely at home. And, you know, while they're reading it at their own pace, they're just taking notes on it. And, you know, I obviously introduce the book to them and we kind of stop and chat about it. And I clarify plot points and characters and things like that. So I'm doing a little bit of teaching, but for the most part, we're just hitting poetry for, I don't know, sometimes it takes 6 weeks to get through the poetry unit just because it's fun. There's so many different voices out there, so much to do with poetry. And you can do it right in class. You just push print on this poem. They mark it up. You know, they take fun notes on it, so they're engaged. They're sort of busy with their hand while they're taking notes on the poem. They're working in groups. You know, they're making presentations. They can sort of do fun visual things with poetry. There's just, I mentioned reading poetry out loud. That's actually a great program called Poetry Out Loud, where kids recite and they memorize and then recite poems from a list online. Do something fun like that, where we'd have sort of dramatic performance of a poem. You can just have them re-record a reading of it on their phone and submit that. You know, just tell them, hey, read this poem with the emotions of the poem. You don't have to memorize it, but just read it, you know, in a way that speaks to the beauty of the language and the story behind the poem. You know, that sort of, there's just so many different fun things you can do with poetry. That's why it's a great, great way to start the year. And you're teaching them this really valuable lesson right away, which is close reading, you know, the all the various literary devices that you're going to need to cover in your course. And I'm teaching literature and composition, so that's obviously a big part of what we do, is sort of trying to figure out right away who knows what with all these different techniques. And that's another sort of presentation that I give in this unit is, all right, well, here's like the 15 most commonly used literary techniques. Do you know them? You know, what are they? Let's look at an example of them. We also interpret them. So it's not just like, hey, this is a personification, but here's an example of somebody interpreting, or usually it's me, right? Giving an example of a sentence that analyzes the use of a, say, personification. You're just interpreting language like you normally would. You're just saying, hey, this device is sort of helping the meaning of this poem in this way. So without further ado, now I promise this is going to be a short one, like I said at the beginning, but now, if you're listening to this podcast a lot, that I did digress, I apologize. I have this thought in my head that I just kind of run with. But the title of this podcast is 5 Poems to Start the Year. So I'm just giving you something valuable, or you can kind of look these poems up and maybe print them out and use them in the first few days of class. And I tried to pick poems. I started with different poems over the years. These are the ones I usually start with. Maybe not Ode to Clothesline. I usually get to later in my units, but I just kind of thought about what would be 5 like really strong poems that are straightforward, but also challenging, that are uplifting, that revolve around a single image. That's usually something that to start the year, you don't want to, you know, throw them Allen Ginsberg or something, right? Or you're just like, oh, wow, there's a lot going on here, you know, and it's like almost too difficult. But you do want to give them, you know, you want to challenge them right away, because if it's something that's really easy, like, I don't know, some Walt Whitman or something, right? We love Walt Whitman, but it's like To a Stranger is one of my favorite poems, but it's really straightforward, right? And there's no opportunity for a lengthy discussion. Like each of these poems, I would say you could spend at least half an hour on, maybe more. If you know how poetry is too, right? You can go line by line. There's an amazing thing about William Blake for me. I don't know if I didn't include any William Blake. That's always a great place to start too. I do a lot of William Blake in my unit. Not when I say a lot, I mean four. You know, this is more than any other poet that we do, just because it's very simple, but when you spend some time with each line, you realize it's insanely complicated and that you could have a conversation that goes forever. Like seriously, about two or three lines. We compare the fly and the tiger in my class. It's always fun because there's so much going on there. And when you first read it, it doesn't seem like there might be. And then you realize there is. I tried to pick five, I love doing this too, because what we're doing is celebrating all the stuff that makes language beautiful. You know, talking about rhyme, metaphor, symbolism, parallel structure, enjambment, stanzas, all that wonderful stuff that makes poetry like really fun and language really fun, because you could obviously do close readings with passages and novels and short stories. It's almost like they have to have that foundation of poetry first to be able to really do that line-by-line analysis later on in the year when the novels start coming. I do poems that play with the conventions of language, and also poems that pay homage to the conventions of language. So ones, these sonnets where it's like, they're following every single rule in the book. And then you got some of the romantics and different things like that in there. Obviously a lot of 21st century poets are breaking the rules all over the place, but it's fun to do a little bit of both. We also listen to poets, like I said before, read their poems out loud, because obviously that's how it all really got started. It's pleasing to the ear and explosive to the mind. You know, that's in a nutshell what poetry is. All right, so without further ado, sorry that was long. the first one is Still I Rise by Maya Angelou. It's wonderful. Again, straightforward, really inspiring. Kids love it. It's uplifting. It's positive. It's about overcoming stereotypes and criticism, all stuff teenagers deal with and cope with. It's great because you can't even read this poem silently and not read it in a way that's emotional. it's impossible to have a dead monotone reading of Still I Rise. And there's actually a couple of cool versions of it online. And then the next one is Invictus by William Ernest Henley. As far as teaching, actually I have a product on Teachers Pay Teachers where I go through and almost every single literary term that these kids need to know is in Invictus. And so if you cover this poem, if you go through all of those techniques in this poem and actually make a word wall with all the techniques in this one single poem, they have what they need for the rest of the year. It's insane. But also, again, inspiring poem. It's about free will, independence, and how to deal with suffering. It's all stuff that, like, I actually had a student tell me he kept a copy of Invictus inside of his locker just as a way of dealing with the day-to-day. Invictus is really good. Ode to Clothesline by Kwame Dawes is really great. Going off of the idea of thinking symbolically and finding meaning in everyday experiences. It's interesting because I've given this poem as a, at the end of a poetry unit, typically you just give a poem, that they haven't seen before. It's like, all right, we're just going to analyze all these poems to practice for this one essay you're going to write where you haven't seen the poem before. And you're just going to write an essay on a poem. And so I'm always surprised that when some students write about Ode to Clothesline, they're not seeing it as symbolic. And they're just kind of like telling the story of the poem, and they're not going beyond what the clothesline like really means. And sometimes I'm like, do they know what a clothesline even is? Like, no, they got it. Like, these kids are so young. Like, you know, even they don't even have that old image of a piece of clothing hanging on a line. So yeah, it's another great one. And then, and it's, again, it's a single image, right? The title. And I always tell my students, like, don't forget the title. Always come back to the title. Why is it titled that? It's the single image, right? It's usually what the poem is about is in the title. So just always come back to the title. This is not, I guess, a good or bad example of that. The next one's The Fish by Elizabeth Bishop. Elizabeth Bishop, she was one of the poets that really, I'm trying to remember when, was it my junior year? Maybe it was my senior year. That just made me, like, I just remember, like, interpreting this, I think it was this poem. And just, like, kind of walking outside after class was over and just, like thinking about life and living with her glasses on or whatever, like, that way that she sees the world, and that she tries to, like, she writes in order to figure out what it is that she's writing about and what it is she's looking at, in these little moments in these poems that are just so, they're so confusing, but also just, like, that's what happens when we think and when we have this intense moment where we're just, like, living, and trying to make sense of our surroundings, no matter how big or small they are. And that the poem, The Fish, is just, it's about this fish. And of course, again, it's super symbolic. And it's about how we immerse ourselves in the things that we see, how we become sort of mentally involved with them. And I love that idea. It's like what it makes me love literature so much, because I feel like it's all about immersion and becoming this thing that we're seeing. And so Bishop is like just like sort of celebrating that, especially in this poem. But the idea of seeing life through a magnifying glass is, I think, appealing to teenagers. And it's like, you know, this is what literature is about. It's like you can see something, experience something in reality, not on your phone or through a TV screen, but you can, like, experience this thing in front of you, this person perhaps even too, and have this moment with it, and so that's a great poem to start with, because it's complicated, but it's about a fish, right? So you can always come back to that. So we're reading a poem about a fish, everybody. So it's not that complicated. But it obviously, you know, it's Bishop, so of course it is. All right, and the last one, so I'm ending with probably the most challenging of all the poems and poets, but this is another example of once you kind of break it down, it's pretty, not easy, but it's called The Motive for Metaphor by Wallace Stevens. I read about this in an essay, and it's called The Motive for Metaphor, Northrop Frye, I think. And it's just, so it's a great poem because it's about literary writing and thinking. It's everything we just talked about, right? It's actually sort of extending it not just to symbolism, but in this case, he's talking about the metaphor. Like, what is the motive for creating a metaphor? And so it's the sort of question of being a writer. And actually, the first sort of set of poems, because I like to study poems in sets that have a topic or an idea that connects all of them. The first sort of set of poems that I talk about are all related to writing poetry or creating art. And so that, you know, again, is the sort of introduction to the course, is, you know, like, say, Billy Collins' Introduction to Poetry, right? It's a great poem, another great poem to start the year with, or a poetry unit with, because he talks about students in his class sort of misanalyzing or sort of missing the mark when it comes to, you know, what studying poetry is all about, which is, you know, not trying to get a thesis statement out of it, but just, you know, having fun with it and having multiple feelings with it and, you know, multiple thoughts with it. But anyway, that is kind of the point of Motive for Metaphor too, because there's so many. I think his point is you're not going to be able to get a single thing out of this poem. It doesn't make sense. There's some things that are just enigmatic, I guess you could say. Like, they're just sort of mysterious. Now, if like I've looked at this poem so many different times that I feel like I could like paraphrase it or whatever. Like I get it, I understand it. But for the when you read this poem for the first time, because I've done it so many different times, so many years now, you really have to poke at it a lot. You really have to really spend some time. And of course, this is a good activity, right? It's where you read the poem out loud, maybe read it a second time out loud. Because the first time you're like, what? Especially with a poem like this, what is going on? And then the second reading, you're like, okay, I sort of know what's going on. Like that one line that was really confusing to me before, now I feel like I kind of know what it means. And then you let them get into pairs or groups and they have more conversations and people are like, what was that line about? I don't know, I was thinking about this. And well, so four or five people are saying a couple different things about the poem. And then you come back as a class, like, all right, what did you talk about? So a couple of people from each group kind of say what they say about the poem. And then as a teacher, it's like, okay, so now, all right, let's put this together a little bit. This group's saying this, this group's saying that. Let's look at this line again, you know, and so you can kind of bounce the conversation around a little bit more where, you know, you're taking into consideration what everybody's saying about the poem. You're adding a little here. You're adding a question. You're, you know, saying, what about this line? Nobody talked about this line. What does that line mean? And so motive for metaphor is just, it's got all that possibility of talking about single lines for a long period of time, but also talking about what the point of literature is. And so I'll kind of let you have your fun with it when you read it. But basically, it's exploring this intersection between consciousness, reality, and imagination. And again, that's sort of the fun of that this first conversation that starts the year, is like, this is about imagination. It's not about, well, it's about two things at the same time. It's about what is real, but it's also what's the power of the imagination. You know, if somebody says, yeah, I'm just going to come up with a random memory. Somebody was talking about solar roadways, right? Have solar panels instead of roads. And so the roads, you know, get the sunlight, charge up all, get all this energy. You know, you're not wasting it, fields, cutting down trees to create solar panels, right? And get them right on the road. So that's imagination, right? That's, so that what we're doing is like having this random, like world that we're conjuring up, right? It's about creativity. So we want create, like the whole point of what we're doing is to create, you know, create creative thinkers, people that can think for themselves, that can conjure up something that is so simple and common sense that everybody would be like, of course we should do that. Maybe it's really expensive and, you know, would have people arguing about it. But still, like that's kind of the point, is that we're thinking in terms of, well, here's this reality, and this is what Wall Stevens is about. We're looking at this kind of boring thing that is like this chair in front of us, and or this carpet, or this house that we wake up in every day. So where's the excitement? Where's the imagination? Where's the love and the passion and, you know, the mystery of and being excited about this reality that for the most part is the same every day, that has been, you know, very predictable for the most part, that, yeah, where we have a status quo, we have conventions, we have traditions, we have culture, we have all these things that keep things the same way, right? People are comfortable with the way things are. And so while Stevens' poetry is like, hey, not cool, you know, if we want to be live fulfilled lives where we are like really, like I was sort of talking about walking outside of class after reading this Elizabeth Bishop poem and having this great conversation about this Elizabeth Bishop poem, where I felt like everything around me suddenly was just beautiful. You know, I was just like sort of happy to be an English major, and I was happy to be in college, and I was happy, just period. You know, I was just happy. I feel like I had found my, like, you know, sort of meaning in life, if you will. It was like having an epiphany at that moment or whatever. But I just remember this walk. So I think that Wall Stevens is after that. Like, how can art be this way that we can have a great walk or have a great interaction, something small, that that suddenly becomes this beautiful, that becomes this thing that we cherish, that we want to sort of relive over and over again, and that's not this, you know, this absolute. And that's kind of what the poem is about. There's no absolutes. There's no, like, this word is this thing, this experience is this. There's all these sort of gray areas, these things that don't make sense, and that's where the fun is. This is the interesting thing, right, about this poem. So this is a poem that would cause a lot of kids to get turned off to poetry because it's very challenging. But once you get to the meaning, it's like, oh yeah, like, this is sort of the point of poetry. It's confusing. It doesn't always say the easy thing. Like, right, when a politician talks, it's like, you want to be as clear as possible, even though they're never clear as possible. Like, wait, what did he just say? Right, but it's supposed to be that way, where it's like very matter of fact, straight, we're going to do this, this is why this happened, whatever. But creative language, literature, poetry is sort of just being playful with it all helps us understand the world better than a person who's just beating language to death by stating mundane facts about reality. So yeah, all these poems extend beyond the individual speaker. They ask the reader to consider their own experiences and perspective. We read poetry, we exercise our imagination to create our own world, our own space, where anything is possible, even if our means of expression sometimes fall short. Poetry makes the ordinary extraordinary. The world is confusing, so is poetry. So embrace your confusion, let it dangle in the air for a minute. Only then will things become clear. The best part of the poetry unit is not the thesis that comes out of a poem. It's the conversations about what the poem could mean. It's the notes in the margins of the poem, the fragments of thoughts that lead to the truth. It's the poem that a student writes after reading a bunch of great poems, where they take a deep breath and let her rip. Thanks for listening. I'd love it if you could give me a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.